The World Tomorrow.
Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. This is a horrible world in which you live today, a time of insoluble problems, a frightening world of the fear of World War III. We've had more than 40 wars since the close of World War II, and there's not real peace in sight as yet. And right now, today, with the deeply dividing problems that confront the entirety of mankind, everyone wants to know why. Wherever you look, whether it's mounting divorce or rising crime or the escalation of the nuclear arms race or the potential breakdown of peace talks between the big powers or the Jew-Arab crisis or divided Berlin or the problems in Vietnam, with an escalating war where the United States seems headed, apparently by some observers thinking at least, toward a massive land war in Asia. And people know that this is a terrible world. They know it's not right, that something is wrong with it, and they wonder what and why. And so they ask why, and no one seems to have the answers. Now, the why might be anything from why do the innocent suffer in Vietnam, to why did God let this tragic accident occur, to why did my brother Timmy die, to why the death of a loved one, or to why something else like the caprice of a tornado or the destructiveness of an earthquake, and people simply do not understand why. And the ones to whom they go for the answers don't seem to have the answers either. Now, recently, Dean Samuel H. Miller, who was dean of the Harvard Divinity School, in a magazine article entitled, "In a World Threatened by Nuclear Destruction, What Can I Believe?" went on to say how you make the rounds and you talk to people in this world on any level, and they know that something is wrong. They know it ought to be righted. They know that even at peace, we're not really at peace, and even in a so-called peace time in general around the world, apparently they don't even call the Vietnam conflict a war yet because war has not been declared, still the average person finds no purpose in living, and in our frenzied search for happiness, we find no sense of direction. Now, he went on to talk about the position or the stature of the church and of religion in this present world of deeply divisive problems. And he said to many, faith still smells of superstition, of the dark ages, of a surrender not commendable in a mature mind. And he went on to talk about how multitudes have found it easy to substitute many things for religious faith, all the way from the distractions of TV to the principles of science. But he said, what can religion offer men in times like these? He concluded in this article that was run in Look magazine, faith confronts large and tragic confusions of meaning when we ask, what can I believe? Given our world and our experience, is it sensible to believe in God? Of course, many people are going to tell you, absolutely not. They're going to say, look, as I'm going to quote to you a couple of cases from leading theologians, from an atheist or a scientist who is an agnostic or an atheist, they say, so long as you see all the human suffering, 92 million Americans with a registered chronic disease, and we're the most affluent nation on the face of the earth, and yet we have enough suffering inside of our own land that it's difficult to appraise it all, and the poverty program is only a part of the thing. But they say, so long as you see divorce and crime and accidents, and there are far more people being killed on the highways than in Vietnam, as a matter of fact, there are far more people killed or have been killed on United States highways in automobile accidents than there have been in all the wars that we have ever fought from the War of Independence until today. And people see this, and hundreds of thousands of families are stricken with the loss of a loved one, or with horrible maiming injuries, and they want to say why. Now let's put it in the words of a young boy who wrote the following question to a newspaper advice counselor. You have some of these newspaper counselors that are supposed to answer your questions, and here was the question. My Sunday school teacher says that God is everywhere, wrote this little boy. Please put this letter in the paper and maybe he will see it. Kind of like writing to Santa Claus, you know. He wanted God to see this letter, and so he thought if it got in the newspaper, God would see it. And so here was the substance of his letter. Dear God, why did you let my brother die? When he was hit by the car, my mother prayed to you to let him live, but you wouldn't. My little brother was only 2 years old, and he couldn't have sinned so bad that you had to punish him that way. Everyone says you're good and you can do anything you want to do. You could have saved my little brother, but you let him die. You broke my mother's heart. How can I love you? Signed, Peter. Kind of a tragic letter, isn't it? But that pretty much expresses what I'm saying. People want to know why. And that why can be anything from why the war in Vietnam and why do civilians get bombed on both sides of the line? And why do the innocent suffer? And why all the disease? And why divorce? And why crime? And why? Why life, for that matter? Why death? Well, what kind of an answer did the advice columnist give? Well, I'll read it to you. He said, your question is one that has troubled religious men for thousands of years. Now, I think that's real good because a lot of times the best way to answer a question when you don't know how to answer it is to say, that is a good question. That's what this advice counselor did, said, now that's a good question. Your question is one that really is a good question because it's troubled religious men for thousands of years. I think that's remarkable that question has troubled religious men for thousands of years when the answer is so simple. But, reading on, this newspaper columnist said, suffering of innocent people is something we cannot understand. But this much is sure, death is not a punishment. It is one of life's mysteries. And so, counsel this person, speak to your minister, Peter. Communicate with God by praying. But look, Peter's not going to communicate with God by praying when Peter has lost all confidence in God, when Peter isn't even sure there is a God, when Peter now thinks that maybe God is some kind of a harsh monster who let his brother die. Peter wrote in his letter that his mother prayed. And he wrote in his letter, he said, God, you could have saved my little brother, but you let him die. Now he said, you broke my mother's heart. Why didn't you answer her prayer? How can I love you? So the newspaper article writer turns around and says, communicate with God by praying. That doesn't answer Peter's problem. That doesn't answer his question. He's not going to communicate with God by praying when he's not even sure there is a God, and when he's pretty well convinced that his mother didn't communicate with God by praying. And he went on, he will help you in your search for wisdom and goodness and help to make your mommy happy again. Well, that's a rather unsatisfactory answer, isn't it? And it doesn't really answer the question. Now, a minister put it this way. This was written by Lewis Castles for UPI. That the hardest question a minister ever has to face is, why did God let this happen? And that is anything that might give us a sudden stab of self-pity or a feeling of being sorry for ourselves. And so he went on to say that the inability to find a satisfactory answer to the great why is the chief cause of religious doubt today. Millions of people are becoming practical, or you might use the term, the modern term that comes out of the civil rights movement, de facto atheists, because they found it impossible to believe that a loving and an omnipotent God created a world in which there's so much evil. And so, of course, believers in God have wrestled, they tell you, with the problem for thousands of years, and no cynic could possibly raise a question about the apparent contradiction between the omnipotent love and the innocent suffering that has not been raised already and discussed thousands of times by Christian theologians from the time of Paul, as he wrote, to the present. Well, of course, they discuss it. This is the age of opinion sharing, when people, they go to the talk programs, they want to hear other people's opinions, and regardless as to how far out and how weird they are, you always cover yourself by saying, well, I don't care if you disagree with me or not. This, you see, is only my opinion, and therefore now I'm willing to listen to your opinion regardless as to how I might disagree with you. So people chew the rag about it. They discuss it, and they argue it, but they never seem to come to any conclusions. And you've never heard the question answered yet. You've heard it talked about. You may have asked the question yourself many times. Why does God allow human suffering? Why does God allow war? Now, in the words of an atheist, I want to quote to you what he said, because he claimed this is practically the reason for the absolute disagreement that there is a God. He said that if he had the power to remake the world, he wouldn't have it the way it is today. This is a statement written by one of the most prominent atheists there is, and he's written books on it, and he's a free thinker type atheist, and his publications are quite widely circulated. He said this, if there is a God, why didn't he give man in the ages past the knowledge so necessary to his existence? Now he said, think of the myriad millions who have died in agony, but whose lives could have been saved and whose sufferings could have been avoided. Of what value is the knowledge acquired today to those who have perished in the past? And he went on to say, I cannot worship a God who, if he thought it necessary to give us eyes, hands, arms, and legs, did not give us perfect ones. If he could, and he did not, this man went on to say, he is beneath contempt for his utterly callous and cruel indifference to man's welfare. Pretty strong words, aren't they? He says this God is beneath man's contempt. Pretty strong words. He feels pretty sure of himself. Now, he said if he could not, that is, give us perfect minds and perfect hearts and lungs and livers and eyes and all of our senses, then he says he is impotent and not worthy of the designation of a God. If he could, he would. And if he doesn't, he can't. And that's that. And he says, take your choice. And then he went on to say, if I had the power to fashion the universe and remake it nearer to my heart's desire, there would be no blind. Now think about this, because it gets right to the heart of the problem. No deaf, no dumb, there would be no crippled, and each child born would live free of disease and possess a mentality capable enough to withstand all the rebuffs of life. There would be no deaths by accident in his world. He said there would be no earthquakes. He wouldn't have any. No cyclones or tornadoes, and unless and until, he went on to say, such a condition comes to pass when man may live free from disease, sorrow, and suffering. There is no God in this vast universe worthy of homage. Now, you know, this man just didn't think very far, did he? You might think he did. You might think, boy, that's pretty good reasoning. That's just the way I would put it. That sounds to me just exactly the way I would feel about it. Now wait just a minute. He said he would remake this universe nearer to his heart's desire, and there would be no blind. Then he means by that there would be no accidents, there would be no venereal disease that would cause blindness at birth. Does he mean by that no explosions? Does he mean by that no metal working and no slivers in the eye? Does he mean by that there would be some kind of prevention for all of these accidents, for these diseases and sicknesses? Apparently he does, because he says he would have no deaths by accident. And he said further there would be no deaf, no dumb, and no crippled people. And every child born would have a mentality capable enough to withstand all the rebuffs of life. Now, my friends, why don't we use a little bit of intellect and reason for a change? This man is trying to tell you that he would like to live in a world where there exists an absolute mental, moral, emotional, and physical straitjacket, where you are deprived of free choice. What causes an accident? Investigate it. Here you are. You're driving down the freeway, and you're in an automobile, and some gal in front of you cuts you out and is tailgating, maybe, and then suddenly slides in real close without allowing sufficient space, and you get good and mad. You blow your cork because you've been driving up and down. You're one of the members of the white-collar establishment that the beatniks are all dropping out from today. And you're good and angry, and so you jam your foot down on the accelerator, you decide you're going to show this gal a thing or two. This happens all the time, so you're wildly cutting in and out, and perhaps an accident occurs. Now, in the world of the remaking of the power to fashion the universe that this atheist is talking about, he wouldn't give you that power. Now, you're familiar, perhaps, with governors on automobiles. Some taxi companies have been known to do that, to conserve gas and to save their drivers from excessive speeds and tickets and all of that. And so there's a governor right on the accelerator pedal, and you can only push it so far, and it stops. It resists you. This atheist is talking about a world where mental, moral, emotional, and physical straitjackets are put around people to where virtually you cannot get mad. What causes blindness? What causes dumbness and deafness? But the free exercise of free moral agency that allows people to poke into their mouths anything that appeals to their fleshly appetites, but which may be slowly killing them. What causes emphysema? What causes lung cancer? You've seen the stats, and so have I. And you know as well as I do that it is an absolute proven fact, statistically proven, and backed by governmental laws now and legislation that have required cigarette companies to so print it right on their packages that there is a direct relationship between cigarette smoking and lung cancer. And yet, a person who feels he's very chic is going to tap his cigarette, he's going to put it in his mouth and light it and say, so what, I got to die someday, and it's my body, and I'm going to live in it and with it the way I want to, and nobody's going to tell me what to do with my life. My friends, that's the essence of the whole question. You are a free moral agent. You have free choice, and so do I. And that's precisely right. A person is warned. He's given all kinds of experience. He's given the lives and the deaths of other people. And he's told, don't do this and don't do that. Slow down. There's a curve coming. Don't drink and don't drive. Don't mix the two together. But people do it anyhow. Because they're free moral agents. And because that has been decreed, and because that is one of the great proofs that there is a God, if we have the wit to see it. But let's go on with the problem a little further. Here is a man who, back in World War II, wrote from the horrible, bloody battleground of the ruins of Stalingrad over in Russia, a German soldier. He was in the German army, and it was in the early months, I believe, of 1943, before the Russians finally closed the devastating tentacles of their pincers around the German army there. Now, in the letters of any of those who died, this person is dead. He died in that battle. Was found this letter by a young German soldier to his home pastor in Germany. Quote, I'm just quoting his letter now for a moment. In Stalingrad, to put the question of God's existence means to deny it. He said, I must tell you this, Father, and I feel doubly sorry for it. You have raised me because I had no mother and always kept God before my eyes and soul. You are a pastor. I have searched for God, he said, in every crater, in every destroyed house, on every corner, in every friend, in my foxhole, and in the sky. And he said, God did not show himself, even though my heart cried out for him. The houses were destroyed, the men as brave or as cowardly as myself, he said. On earth there was hunger and murder, from the sky came bombs and fire. Only God was not there. And he said, if there should be a God, he's only with you in the hymnals and the prayers, in the pious sayings of the priests and the pastors, in the ringing of bells and the fragrance of incense. But he said, God is not in Stalingrad. And you've got to give credence to that letter. You've got to say the man had a point, except that he didn't have access to the real answer because his priest or his minister or his pastor couldn't give it to him. And thousands are the pastors who freely admit they do not have the answer to those questions. I've already shown you that. They claim it's plagued theologians for centuries, and they don't have the answers. But there is an answer, and that answer is simple. Now, from Dusseldorf, Germany, UPI report, talked about how a Brooklyn interior decorator suffered a heart attack. Here he was telling a war crimes court about how Nazis had forced him to throw his baby sister into a burning trench. Recalling the incident for the benefit of the judges, the poor man simply couldn't stand it. And he finally broke down, and he slumped over in his chair. Had a heart attack. I don't know if he survived it. It didn't say in the newspaper. But he said this. He said God was right there, and he said God saw every bit of it. He said, why didn't he do anything? Why didn't God do something? This is the question that our theologians cannot answer for us, a question philosophers can't answer for us, a question you have often asked. You've thought, why does God allow war? God is there, isn't he? If he is, why doesn't he stop it? And so to many, many people, this is enough to make of them practical, if not literal, atheists or skeptics at best, agnostics at best, doubting the very existence of a God. People today say, you cannot prove there is a God. But my friends, let's get our reasoning straightened out. Listen, people look at other people and look what other people do and get good and disgusted with them and then turn right around and blame God, like the people in South Africa some time back, who in a long, prolonged drought, of bad weather and crop loss, hung signs on their fences along with a bucket and said, this is for donations for God. We'd like to have you stop and put pennies in the bucket to buy God a pair of glasses so he can see all the suffering of both man and beast. This is the attitude of people. Years ago, I used to have the same attitude. I used to say, look, if these people living the way they are, I saw a lot of religious people. I saw some of the mistakes they made. I saw some of the accidents that they had. I saw some of the bias and some of the prejudice that you oftentimes find, lamentably, in the minds and hearts of some religious people. I said, look, if these people are Christian, if these people are religious people, then you can't tell me there's anything good in religion. And this is exactly the way many people reason. And they say, therefore, God is wrong. There isn't any God. Now, my friends, can you imagine the kind of a world this atheist is talking about and that a lot of you have thought about? You say there can't be a God so long as there is war. What you're trying to say is there can't be a God so long as there is human nature. What you're trying to say is there cannot be a God so long as you have the free moral agency to blow your stack. So long as you have the free moral agency to decide to commit a crime. To get mad and to blow your cork and to have a knockdown, drag-out brawl with your wife. To get good and mad and to kick the dog or to beat your kids. Sure, there are accidents, but what causes accidents? Any number of dozens of things, but mostly it's the nut, the loose nut on the end of the wheel, you might say. It's mostly the driver. It's not speed. Speed doesn't cause accidents. Speed, if an accident occurs, just makes them worse, as I think everybody knows if they just think about it for a moment. But the wrong practice of drinking and then driving, which again is free moral agency. When the guy gets to the point to where he still has enough free moral agency and enough willpower to say, now wait a minute, this next one is going to be one too many. But when he gets to the point to where he says he isn't able to say that last one was one too many, then he's not going to be able to control himself when he gets behind the wheel of an automobile, and instead of that, it becomes a lethal weapon. And so it's about time we began to realize that it's a matter of the exercise of free moral agency. Would you want to live in a world where you were unable to express emotion? Here's a guy in an automobile with his girlfriend. He's about to make a pass at her. He tries to say it, but his tongue locks. His mind locks. He's trying to say, honey, and he gets about that far, and his tongue locks. He can't say a word. Because, you see, there's a God. And that God isn't going to allow illegitimate children to be born. That God is going to stop the spread of venereal disease to make these atheists happy. So there won't be any more blindness and deafness and dumbness and thalidomide babies and babies with flippers and wings instead of arms. Is that the kind of a world you imagine? Let's think a little bit about it. You're trying to tell me, and this atheist is trying to tell us all, that we want God, if there is a God, to remove from us our free choice and to take away from us free moral agency. Ridiculous. The very fact that we are authorized and allowed to exercise free moral agency and free choice is the proof that there is a God, is the proof, and that there is a God, and you can prove it, and that there is a great purpose being worked out here below. I want to quote from you just one scripture right quickly, a couple of verses. In the book of Deuteronomy, way back in the Old Testament of the Bible, is this claim, this statement. And it's found in chapter 30 of the book of Deuteronomy and verse 15, where one is quoted in the first person as if he is God and says to us, see, I have set before you this day life and good and death and evil. Now you have before you a free choice, and this verse states that you are a free moral agent with the ability to choose. A little later you find in the 19th verse in this same chapter of the book of Deuteronomy, way back, the fifth book in the Old Testament of the Bible, one in the first person who claims he is God, who says, I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing, therefore choose. Now that's not all the verse, but let's pause just for a moment. You have a free choice to make. This atheist and other people of his ilk would tell you that you shouldn't have a free choice. In other words, it seems like they are saying they will not believe in God until that God rules them with a rod of iron and makes them make up their mind to do what they don't want to do. Denies them the ability to hate, to covet, to lust, to fight, to get angry, to steal, to cheat, to divorce, to do whatever they want to freely. He says, I call heaven and earth to record this day against you that I've set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both you and your seed may live. Well, there's the crux of the matter. You have been given free choice, free moral agency. You can't begin to imagine a world with a sort of an unseen wall, like if you've ever heard of a person walking through a plate glass window that was just recently polished, and with a shock he thought he was walking out of doors and he smacks into a bunch of shards of broken glass. Here is somebody who wants to experience anger, or whose mind is actually lusting after something or somebody, or someone who decides that he wants to acquire the territory or the property or the wife of his neighbor. And so his mind sets up all this lustful desire, which is innate, an inherent characteristic of human nature, and suddenly his mind just stops. It balks at it like an unseen wall. Here's a little toddler. He wants to run into the street. But he tries to run off his yard, and there's a sort of a hidden, unseen bulwark there. He can't see it. He gets to the edge of the grass. He can't go any further. He's frustrated. He sits down kicking and screaming and shouting and banging his little chubby fists against this unseen wall that won't let him do what he wants to do. My friends, it's about time we began to use real logic and reasoning. You don't want to live in the kind of a world where you are denied your free choice. Now, Dr. Robert M. Pate said, so long as we have human nature, we shall have war, and that's a fact. Because war is the direct result of man exercising his free moral agency, his free choice of deciding what he wants to do, to whom he wants to do it, and when he's good and ready to do it. Now, sure, there are laws. There are laws that tell you don't do it, but most people don't obey those laws. A lot of us have these arguments and these reasonings. We like to say to somebody, well, I like to have everybody else obey the laws. I like to have them make laws so that my neighbors would keep off my property, that my neighbors wouldn't covet my wife or my daughter, but I don't want anybody restricting me and telling me what to do. And as long as I see the world in such a mess, I can't believe in people, therefore I won't believe in God. That's kind of silly reasoning, and yet it seems to be reasoned by a lot of people with degrees and rather lofty jobs and titles, rather lofty positions. Well, it's about time you saw the truth of it all. I have a free booklet that will do precisely that for you, show you exactly what is the truth of it all. Why does God allow war? I've covered a part of it and only a part. There's a great deal more. But this is the crux of the matter that I've covered on this one program. Now, you can write for this booklet on Why Were You Born? It's absolutely free of charge, and it tells you precisely why human beings are on this earth, why we were put here in the first place. Entitled, Why Were You Born? It answers questions such as, why does God allow the innocent, the aged, the bystanders, the so-called innocent victims of war? Why accidents? Why disease? Why sickness? Why human suffering? The booklet, Why Were You Born? Shows you there's a reason why you're alive. People today are disillusioned. They're frustrated, they're enervated, they're unhappy, they see no purpose in life, their lives, their families are directionless, they're going nowhere, they're a group of nobodies lost in a vortex with no sense of direction and no purpose in your life. It's about time you found there is a purpose, and this booklet shows you what it is. Now also these free booklets that I've announced from time to time on Does God Exist? And the one entitled The Proof of the Bible. They're both free of charge. There's no price for them, and there is no price for the Plain Truth magazine. 52 pages, absolutely filled with pictures, some of them the most remarkable close-up color photography in our science lab that you have ever seen about some of these strange creatures. And in the current number, this article on Go to the Ant, you know that scientists for years thought Solomon was wrong? They thought that when Solomon said that ants actually gathered their food in the summer and stored it up for the winter, that this was utterly wrong. It couldn't be true. Well, it is true, and this article shows you it's true, and they've discovered there are harvesting ants, and that, too, is a great blow to the theory of evolution. So the article on the ants, every single number in the Plain Truth, articles on that subject. They're absolutely free of charge. There is no price for them. No one's going to call on you. There is no follow-up. Your name is carefully kept in our modern IBM files. It's not given to someone else. There is no bill to follow. If you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Remember the articles. And so until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.